understands his actions and he's sinning. Now, my question is at what stage are you expected to say, I am aware of my actions, what I'm doing? Like, I'm aware now that, okay, it's very new to me. I mean, it's a week old, but I'm aware there's a God. Okay, now, I believe that there's a God, okay? And I believe that God's law is the Torah. Now, I'm aware then, because I've seen it, that you must pray three times a day. You must say brachos every single day. You must bench after meals. You must fast all the time. Now, if I don't do those things, am I aware of the consequences of my actions at this day? I mean, how far does it extend? Do I become religious tomorrow? Because I'm aware there's a God. What's the kind of God?
I would like to find here a... that question is... I think that question is place. Now, before the Rambam, let me tell you this. There is a story in Medrash about a Roman governor, I think, is talking to one, talking to, I think it was Rabbi Akiva. And he says to Rabbi Akiva, I am more valuable than your teacher Moses. He says, how come? He says, King Solomon said it. What did King Solomon says in Ecclesiastes? A dog alive is more worth than a dead lion. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu is already dead long ago. And I'm still alive. So I'm more important. So the sage says to him, let's try. I'll tell you something. Let's try. You issue a decree that for 3 days nobody should make fire. Nobody should light fire. We'll see, will people listen to you or not? And he's a governor. Third day, Akiva comes to him, they go out to the garden, to the roof garden, and they saw the chimney with smoke and other chimneys. He says, look, my dead lion has decreed in his lifetime that a Jew shouldn't make fire on his head. Since then, he says, no transgressions. And you made easy the decree 3 days ago, and people don't keep it. Now, I learned from that story, I learned that standard of the Jewish community were different than today. If Rabbi Akiva could make a statement for so many years, a Yid didn't dare make fire on Shabbos. Can you say it today? In Jewish history, there was a very sharp decline, a sudden decline, right almost together or immediately after the French Revolution. Part of it may be explained, there is a book. I have it here in the library. I have to remember. To remind myself of it. It's a book written, the author I remember is by a man by the name of Schiller. Oh, I know the name of the book. The Road Deck. Yeah. And he. To a certain extent, he is mentioning the influence of the French Revolution, and it has changed. Now, that law was that law could be understood within the standards, the old standards of the Jewish community. Today, I want to read to you what that the code of my mouth is. He starts about a person who does not recognize the Torah. During the second Commonwealth, there have been people who have been recognizing halfway. They said they trust the written law, but not the oral law. Are you familiar with this? Huh?
What are those people called?
The Sadducees.
Yeah.
And then later, there is a sect, Karaites, which is also the same sect. They say that they accept the written law, but they do not accept the oral law. It so happens that the written law without the oral law is of little use. As a matter of fact, the New Testament is basing itself upon the Old Testament. You know that. The church tells us that the prophets have foretold the coming of their Messiah. They sold themselves during the first century when the church was about to sell itself. They could sell themselves only by saying, here are prophecies, and here is how the prophecy was realized. Follow? There is a lot of misreading in it, a lot of misinterpretation, but that's the way they built it. So therefore, the church had to establish the authority of the Old Testament in order that they should be able to lean on it. Is that clear? Huh? Now, so here is the church is accepting the Old Testament. But the way of life, the Christian way of life, is far not similar at all to the Jewish way. And they have the written law. But the written law without the interpretations of the oral law, this is what's happening to it. Is it clear what I'm saying? Now, here in the code, Maimonides code, he is talking about a man who does not recognize the discipline of the oral. In one place, Maimonides himself says, talking historically, he says that the Sadducees did not accept neither, they didn't believe neither in the oral nor in the written law. But politically, they couldn't afford saying that they don't accept the written law, so they had to say, accept. And he makes a comment, and he says it didn't cost them anything, because as long as you can interpret the law the way you want, you can do whatever you want. Nothing is standing in your way. Is it clear? Take a look. The church calls itself the religion of love. You know that? That's how they call themselves. Now, I don't know how much love it has demonstrated during the last 99 years. Because once you can interpret, it's free. Now here it says, it makes a statement, that's the code. The one who does not recognize the oral law is not a part of the Jewish world. Excludes himself from the Jewish community. And let me just mention this. Does really a person who does not believe in the oral law, is he really not a Jew anymore? If he would not be a Jew, the anti-Semite would be. The fact is that nobody is hated the way a Jew is by anti-Semites. And if I would like to just to qualify a Jew, I look whether he's being hated by anti-Semites. This is another discussion about it, what it is, but it's a fact. So, what my mind says, the one who does not accept the oral law is not positive. It's true for trouble he is. Then comes a paragraph which I'm interested in. It says, this is only a man who denied the oral law originally. He followed his light conscience, I would say, and the desires of his heart, and he denies the oral law originally. Nobody made him do it. He did it himself. As the Sadducees, as the early Sadducees. But the children of those who erred away and their grandchildren, whose parents misled them, and they were born among the Karaites, who raised them in their way, he should be looked at as a child who was kidnapped and who was given the wrong education, whom you cannot blame for his way of life. Even if he came later among Jews and he saw the standards of Jewish life and he is not eager to pick them up, pick that standards up, says, don't blame him. It's not his fault. It is recommended, it's a great merit to attract them with peaceful words until he will return to the strength of them. This is in which means what I said before. The law at that time was understood when standards were, if somebody transgressed things, it was his own decision. Is it clear? So, did I answer your question?
No way, but
in which way not? Let's hear. Let's discuss it.
Can we talk to people who were born? We people whose parents put it in a non-religious spot.
Right. And your parents in most cases was not their fault either.
Exactly.
Because this is a tradition which started with the French Revolution.
But now what I'm saying to you,
yeah.
What to what degrees do we go now? I mean, now we're coming back. We appreciate certain things about Judaism that we haven't seen before, accepted. But I mean, does that now make us obligated? Okay, it makes us obligated to learn. But I mean, to what degree does one learn now? Does one go to yeshiva for the next 7 years to learn? I mean,
that's a question, but he asked another question. You asked a question.
It's two questions.
Do you? No, it's not exactly. You asked, does it obligate you to sit for the next 7 years in an issue? That's what you asked. Huh?
Yes. No, I'm saying I've reached a stage where I think one says, yes, I can see that there's purpose in the Jewish religion, and there's purpose in the Torah. Okay, now, I believe there's a God, there's purpose in the Torah.
Uh-huh.
I believe the Torah is God's written law.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, I've been living a secular life. Where does one person go from there? It seems like, because now you see a couple of things, because you've been to a couple of shiurs, you see people saying blessing every day, late, feeling, putting on the tzitzit. Now, those are totally foreign acts to me. Now, I'm saying to you, I don't know if I'm ready for that, to wear a black hat and a black coat.
I'll tell you something. I am not ready for it either. Because those are symbols which mean nothing, like head, like coats, mean just nothing. Talking about tefillin is something else. Talking about tzitzit is something else. Looking at a black head is nothing. It's nothing. It's a style here. It's a Jerusalem style. Come to Muncie in New York.
Same thing.
Yeah.
The same thing.
They look
at
the guys on the yeshiva when they see them.
They
come in
with jeans.
Jeans is something
else. But it has nothing to do. Jeans is not a transgression of anything. But no, we'll talk about it. Let's talk for a minute about this. Jeans is something which came up in the 60s. Before the 60s, there was no such thing. And this is a remnant of the hippie revolution. And now, the hippie revolution, you are too young to be familiar with it. Huh?
And
were you mixed up with it? Now, the hippie revolution was really a reaction against hypocrisy. Right. Against nonsense of standards, which didn't make any sense. And the young people, they're looking for something. And it was a reaction, they broke out. So they thought by freeing themselves from everything, they freed themselves from dress. They started to look different. That was the revolution. Now, they were right in their diagnosis. Society didn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense either today. But the cure was not the right one. Because what is wrong is excess freedom is wrong. That's a very good question. But while I'm in the middle of talking, if you remember again, we'll talk about it. It's a very good question. So, this, I was talking about genes. No, wait a minute. And I make a distinction between a nice, neat, business suit, not black, and between a pair of jeans. There's a difference. The difference is that when I dress neatly, I pay respect to all of you. No, wait a minute. When I dress neatly, in good taste, I pay respect to everyone. Because I would like people to see me in a neat way. Jeans were just the opposite. The origin, hippies, were just the opposite. In spite, I don't care what you do. In order to free myself, to have full freedom, that's what they understood under freedom, to have full freedom, I shouldn't be controlled by anything, not even by public opinion. So therefore, I have to do something to break myself, to demonstrate that I don't care for public opinion, that I don't care for what you think about. Then it became a style. The style was to be like everyone, different. Right. Pardon? Yes. They started back. That's it. Yeah, this is a different, let me say this if I understand. You say that the tendency to dress like everyone has led to assimilation. Is that what you are saying? Yeah. No, I'll tell you, I'll be sort of nice. The jeans is a style. It's a style is you want to to be part of a certain group. Right? Now, the group which has invented genes invented it in order to throw off all components. The people who were tailoring nice business suits, but tailoring the business suit was tailored in order to please other people. The jeans started in order to, in spite of other people, but then it continued in order to please all the jeans. You don't agree with it? You just said it, to conform to an unconform.
Now the institution is one for different reasons. A, it's comfortable.
Yes.
B, it's practical.
Then it's something.
Then you're right. That's the only reason why Jesus lasted. Now let's take something else. Let's take the black coat and the black hat. That was brought about in the 16th century. But when the Polish people were put into ghettos, forced by the noblemen period to wear black coat and black hat, which was at that time, basically when it was originally put on, was basically a badge of shame, forced upon them by the nobles. What they have done it today is they've used it as a form and as a means to keep themselves isolated from identification and to keep themselves isolated. When in today's society, it is not required for them to do it, but they keep doing it, and it is still a badge of shame because of what its initial statement was.
And, you know, negatively, also, I agree with it totally. Negatively, right? It's like we have some very, very religious body, okay? That I see them, like, they're very religious people. They don't feel, now they feel they have to put on a black hat and a black coat also. They want to express duty. I think that's silly. You know, I think
I agree with you. That's what I said before. That there is no value in the black head and the black suit. There is nothing wrong. But I want to qualify something. When we sit here, we are not sitting to judge the world. We are sitting to learn for ourselves our own way of life. It doesn't bother me whether other fellow is wrong, the other fellow is right. That's his business. My business, I want to be correct. He wants to know what is wrong and what is right. So for me, the black hat, as a matter of fact, you don't see me wearing a long coat. I'm wearing a short coat. And I had pressure already to wear a long coat. And I had to give in for Shabbos. For Shabbos I give in, for something. But it doesn't mean that I think it's right.
The other day, we would one of these classes, it was mentioned that Noah had three sons.
Right.
Yefesh.
And Chom.
Yeah, I mean, this is beyond, these facts are beyond dispute.
Yeah.
And I particularly remember that the teacher in the class said that we, the Jews, are descendants of Shem.
Right.
Yefesh, is that the right, from which we get the word Yofi, which means beautiful, exterior, external beauty, was the father, if you like, of what became Greek culture, which is very physically orientated and very concerned with external and Greek appearances. If that's the case, and you know what I'm getting at, why are we at all concerned with how we look? We are
very much. Again, we have to go to the codes, but it's in a different value. No. In a different, as a matter of fact, this you can find, there's the Book of Knowledge in the library. In the Book of Knowledge, there's one section, that's the first volume of the code. He has a section and human character. I don't know how it's called. In Hebrew, it is Hilchos Deos. I don't remember how to translate this in English, but if you ask anyone to show you that section of Deos and character, you'll ask what is summit of Anthony. And you'll find in one of the chapters that he's talking about this. And he says, dress should be neat and simple. Should be clean, neat, and simple. That's it. Code of my manners.
Where's the source of that in the Bible to Moses?
I'll tell you. If you would be able to find everything explicitly in the five books of Moses, you wouldn't be. Talmud, you wouldn't need the code of my manners.
There must be a source somewhere.
There is a source. But he has it in the code, and about that dress should be neat and simple. And this is what is about dress. So one thing where I answer. This is not a problem. Now, but the problems, let's go out to the problems. The problems would be putting on tefillin. So let me tell you, and it's very hard to, I can talk about guidelines, I cannot talk in detail. But let me tell you, years ago, a boy came to the Yeshiva in Los Angeles. Out of the clear sky, he was 16 years old. In Los Angeles, nobody knew about the yeshiva that I came in that time. And I started the yeshiva in 1953. And here, a boy comes, brings his mother, here being a slave. He wants to learn, for some reason, he wants to learn. So we're fine. So I told him, come. It was the beginning of the summer. I told him at that time that I expected the summer program to start by the end of the week. He says, when should you come? I said, come Friday and we'll stay with Mr. Shabbos and then we'll see. The boy moved in, didn't move out anymore. I want to go home, it's straight at home. I want to eat kosher. So he remained. Then he came to me and he asked me, how could he pray he cannot read? Can he pray in English? I said, yes. I said, train yourself, it will be hard to read the first portion of Shema. And this you say in Hebrew, all the rest in English. After a couple of weeks, we will have no problems with the first chapter. Add a line of the next chapter. Just one. When this will be easy, add another line. Now this fellow, he didn't eat well. Stopped eating well. Why? He said that he'd be there for some reason, it's so long. He can't afford the time, he says, for business of money. So he didn't play. This was going on for 3 months. Now it's been a number of years since then. He's a famous CPA in California today. And he holds on to what he learned. So we have to train ourselves also. Can jump. We cannot jump through everything. But we are trying to learn more. then at least we aim to live a correct Torah life. I give myself time. Is it clear what I said? But let me tell you, the key to everything is learning. The key to everything is learning. And I didn't understand what you said. Knowing and learning are two different things. It so happens that Torah is an inspiring factor. Learning inspires me. And this is exactly what he says. Attract them in a peaceful way until they will come back to the strength of Torah. Because of discipline. Jewish discipline is a hard discipline. And a person has to have a very strong inspiration and incentive to live after it. And the only thing which gives it is Torah study. This is interesting. I have remind me, if I will forget, years ago, I printed a little article about those problems. I have it home. I can bring you a copy. If you want to give me a ring next week, are you going to be on a trip? I'm giving my telephone. It's 537-420. And just give me a ring next Tuesday. Remind me I should bring with me that which was talking. Which is talking about those questions. Yes. Yeah, your question before. Let's first finish one thing. Unless we say we are complete, then we'll get something else. And you also had a question.
No.
I answered it.
Yes.
You know the fellow that said, I made pause all my life, I didn't know. You know about it? Huh?
Awesome.
That's in a piece by Molière. He had some, there's a teacher, and the teacher explains what's poetry. And then he says, what's prose? He says, everything which is not poetry is prose. He says, what are you making prose? I didn't know. That's what happened to me. I answered you. Let's continue this. Any more questions?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned before when we were talking about genes, came on to a point and said that the hippie revolution was a revolution against hypocrisy. And what they were, one of the things they were revolting against, if you like, was the fact that society was meaningless. And then you said, and still is.
Huh?
And then you said, society still is. Which is not surprising considering that we're talking about 20 years ago. You said the hippies were revolting against society, which they felt to be meaningless.
Yeah, it's still meaningless.
And it's still meaningless.
Yeah.
Okay. If people like us come from that society, come from all over the world, from a secular background, come to an institution, and a place such as Jerusalem here, which you would say is not a meaningless society.
Huh?
You would say this is not a meaningless society. Where we are now.
This is not a
meaningless society.
No, it's not meaningless at all.
This comes on to the point that was made here. If we come to an institution such as this for anything from a few days to a few months,
yes,
or even a few years, most of us are going to go back to this meaningless society. Going back.
Not necessarily so.
Well, say that people just... Most people when they come here don't come here to intend to stay here. They come here to find out something about
them.
But they nevertheless go back to a society which is on the whole meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can see people in this institution here who spend most of their day, most of the working day, in the Beit HaMikdash, studying the Talmud. And by doing, I've read some sort of secondary sources, if you like, on Jewish religion. You know, things like the role of women, what the mitzvahs are, things like that, which stress that the most. And you mentioned it yourself just now. You said one of the most crucial elements of Jewish religion is studying the Torah, study aspect. Now, are you saying that the only meaningful life, the only meaningful society, one in which all the members of that society devote themselves almost entirely to studying the Torah? I mean, is that the summit of human existence?
Let me answer.
Right.
Let me answer. The first thing is that don't think that all humanity is within the limits of the Jewish people. There are no humanity standards outside. Which was never said. There are standards. And people can be very decent people not being Jewish. It so happens that by being Jewish, by being born, I enter a different society which has more obligations. Is it clear what I said?
Yeah.
Now, if we want to take a bird's view, I mean by going out of ourselves and looking over the entire area. I mentioned it in class, but the same as in the business. The business may have all kinds of sections. May they have a decorating section which goes on selling public relations with your understanding. But they are necessary. If you don't have them, the sales department. So the objective, what justifies everything, is the sales. Is that clear? Take the sales department away, then everything becomes useless. On the other hand, there is a certain condition that those departments which are spending should keep a certain control not to go out of size. Because if they spend out of size, they'll eat up all profits. At the creation of the world, looking at the creation of the world, the human society, what can also be divided in the section which is the objective and the other auxiliaries. So the objective is the Jewish people. To justify everything is the behavior of Jewish people. All other people are justified by our existence on condition that they observe a minimum of human standards. And this is what we call in the Torah the seven commands of the children of Noah, which take in honesty, which take in no murder, takes in no cruelty to animals.
Yeah.
Those are just minimums. Is it clear what I said?
Yes, they should feel with no cruelty to animals. Does that mean that they also have to kill their animals in a kosher way?
No. That's the question of it, that's it's in short, I don't know, this, that's a short statement. It needs a lot of study to explain it. But our time is limited, so please just take it the way I said it. If you can have questions, have a session and ask, we'll try to go into it. So therefore, but there are minimums for being a normal part of human society. And what is, aside from those seven commands, there is another. Even for a Jew, to be productive. Because every human being is a consumer. So, by consuming and not producing, we are parasites. Is it clear what I say? So, according to the law, you were talking about qualifying as a witness. According to the law, a professional gambler is disqualified as a witness. Because he is a taker and not a giver. He is a consumer, not a producer. You follow what I say? Huh? So this is a very basic condition of every human being to produce. I don't care what produces. It may be a tiller, but it produces. As a Jew, I don't expect a non-Jew to put on tefillin. If he doesn't put on tefillin, he's a fine person. I should put on tefillin. A person should at least strive to reach the stage when I'll put on tefillin and have an incentive. How? By going on learning. Doesn't make any difference whether I learn about tefillin or I don't know whether I learn here in what mesichtes I learn. Huh? Do so. Now, Baba Kama is the laws of thoughts. Doesn't tell me, you know what Torah is.
Civil law. Civil law.
Yeah, it's civil law.
Contentious civil law.
Right. Baba Kama is mainly property responsibility. Property responsibility means that if my property causes a damage, how far goes my responsibility? has nothing to do with feeling, has nothing to do with tzitzis, has nothing to do with Shabbos. But it is Torah. And as Torah, it is inspired. I think I'm coming a little close to your question. What is a law? If you have a law in physics, what is it? A law in physics and chemistry means that those elements, they are handled in a certain way, they always produce the same product, right? Huh? It so happens that the laws of ethics are also part of nature as the laws of physics. It so happens that a society which is lawless is orderless and is destroying itself. It is as much a law in nature as a law in physics, but it's so flexible that we cannot read it with our eyes. And Kohelis, Ecclesiastes, makes a statement. Because the result of misbehavior do not come immediate, are not immediate. This is why people have tendencies to misbehave. That's a sentence in Ecclesiastes. It means, by the way, I have in my packet something, which is very impressive. I have a clipping from Reader's Digest. Take a look what it says. Is there a substitute for that? Huh? It's very interesting. And he is not. That's 15 years old, that shipping. It was 1970. And it was a chapter out of a book which was going to be published, and I don't know whether the book was published or not. And he tells you that without God you're in trouble. Society is in trouble. That's what he's telling.
What is that? Is that anti-Semitic?
No, just the opposite. It may be, I think, what's the name of the fellow who wrote it? A Klein, maybe a Jew. Huh? It's very interesting. Can make a copy of it. Very interesting. But why did I mention this? Because he's coming to the same thing. That if you do not behave according to what he understands, a religion, the results are a disaster. And we have our society today is collapsing. Can you, let me tell you, in 1939 or 1940, I came out of a meeting, 1 o'clock in the morning, on West 57th Street. I was living at that time at Clinton and Grand. You know what this is? Nice. I decided, instead of waiting for the subways in the middle of the night, I'll walk. I walked all the way. A nice walk, right? Would you have done it today? Huh?
Alice?
He says with the gusset, yes.
So something changed. Last year, was it last year or 2 years ago? A woman was slaughtered in the subway. Noontime. Now it's coming, huh? Which was not in 1929, was not in 1940. Huh? I don't know, I'm not going in, but the fact is that a society deteriorates. It's not a safe place to live anymore.
They say that in London, for example. They say that today in London, you know, you can't walk around like you used to.
Yeah.
But in the 18th century in London, it was far more violent than it is now. People always forget that. Okay, so you had this sort of golden era during the war or after the war or something, where everybody had their door open, everyone was making bread, and everyone was lovely.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. In London in the 19th century, I think it was safe, except for weekends. People became drunk. That's when they used to beat up their wives, which was a standard in London at that time. Yeah. But weekdays, at least, it was safe.
Well, members of Parliament evidently didn't think so, because they would only walk home in pairs. An MP leaving Westminster now, which is where the Houses of Parliament are, would be quite happy to get on a subway or on a bus, go home. In the 18th and 19th centuries, politicians would only leave the Houses of Parliament. This is recorded fact. They wouldn't go. People used to hang up there. It was a clever technique, actually.
Maybe. I don't know to tell you, maybe politicians have a special bad conscience. I don't know.
They just know what's going on.
Yeah, but talking, one moment, again, I want to say, so that there is a natural law, and that natural law, we learn it in the Torah, and the law of thoughts was given to us to Moshe from Sinai, the same as teachers, as to the same thing. And it brings us closer to the creation itself. That's the inspiration. I didn't say to learn about teachers. I didn't say to learn about property damages. To learn. I have all kinds of topics that you have in mind. Now I came close to your question, but can I go to a new subject?
So we have one question in the answer.
Pardon?
We have one more question on this.
Yeah, yes.
It's fine. If you spend several weeks or several months learning, and you find the Torah very inspiring, and think that it's a lot of truth and a lot of wisdom.
Right.
Even let's say you think it's the most it's one of the wisest systems you've ever come across, but you don't feel any closer to thinking it's God. You feel as mad as found as it all seems, doesn't move you towards things. What does Torah say you should do? Is a person obliged to study indefinitely until you feel that you want to keep it stuck? Or what should one do? If learning seems to get deeper and deeper,
There is, I don't know how to translate it, but the Gemara says, do correct things, even if it's not for the right reason. As long as you do them, one day you'll do them for the right reason. So therefore, if I want, now that statement in Talmud itself, I should understand, to whom is that statement addressed? To a person who does not have any right reason. Doesn't make any sense. If he has the right reason, then the answer is, it is to the person who intellectually understands that the way of right behavior, of correct behavior, but he does not have enough incentive to carry it out. And he comes and asks a question, should I use other incentives? The answer is yes. Now, what are the other incentives? It's very easy. A person adapts most standards of his environment. So therefore, if I will understand that I should live a life according to it, I don't have enough incentive for it. So I try to live in a community where this is standard, and it will be easy for me. I add another incentive. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Saul Salanter, you haven't heard the name of Rabbi Saul Salanter. You heard the name? He, aside from being the teacher of ethics, he was also very sharp. He was very famous. And he tells that at a certain time, he had a decision. He should not build new constructions in Talmud. And learn simple just to understand. And not building new chedushim. Because by building new chedushim, you build up your life. Learn. Said after a time he realized that it's not right. Because in order to study, you need that incentive. So here, the same thing.
The question is not so much that there are things in Torah which seem right, which there aren't incentives to do. Things which seem right, that's incentive to do them. But that doesn't mean that the things which don't seem right. For instance, the ethics.
What doesn't seem right?
Yes, well, for example, there are certain things in terms of ethics in the relationships which to us seems to have very profound understandings of. Yet there are other areas in which.
Give me an area.
Feeling. Those things seem to
let me talk about it. You know, according to the Torah, let's start about something else. You know that meat eating has side effects, which vegetation does not have. First, after a meal, you eat a dessert. What's your dessert? Fruit juice. Now we are spoiled, sometimes ice cream. But normally, we should have fruit. What is the function of the dessert? Function of dessert is a taste chaser. It chases away the aftertaste of meat or of fish. After fruit, I don't have the only what I have an aftertaste, and I don't know how to explain it, is onions. Onions is a vegetation, and it has an aftertaste, and I don't know why. I can't figure out. But meat, I can figure out. Because, and then something else, if somebody was to adapt the slightest thing, he says, stay away from red meat. Then he say, stay away from. So, poetry too, I mean, you have a vegetarian diet has no side effects. How come? So when I learn the Chumas, I find it. When Adam Rishon, the first Adam, was created, he was not permitted to eat meat. He could eat only, could be only a vegetarian. When was it permitted? After the flood, Noah was permitted. And I was asking myself, what happened? Now, meat is a symbol of somebody building his existence and the perishing of another existence and the destroying of another existence. Is that right? I kill an animal in it. I kill life in order to keep up my life. So it is something. You should have a decent feeling against it. And how come it was permitted? Now, in order to understand it, you have to understand two principles. One principle that the entire universe is one unit. And human behavior or misbehavior may influence the standards of the entire universe. The same as the body is one unit. And if you mistreat one part of your body, the entire body suffers from it. If you mistreat one part of the universe, the entire universe has effects. It affects it. Second principle is, have you been to Shabbat in New York? Are you not afraid yet? Now. In the evening, I don't.
It's not pleasant.
No. And I'll tell you something, even daytime, don't go into Alaska. Yeah. Well, in the Sabbath, you have an experience, sometimes the lights are going out. And as soon as the lights are going out, short or something, some small blobs are going on. Huh? Did you experience it? Huh? What is it? It's a relay system. And we have it today in the almost every public building has something, has an emergency generator, which is works on a relay system. That if they, when the normal current stopped, right away, this is switching itself on. I'll tell you what it is. It's very simple. You have a contact. The emergency system has that contact. A spring is pushing it here, and a magnet is pulling it back. And that magnet is electrified. So when that magnet comes there, it closes a circuit in the avenue. Is it clear what I said? Huh? You understand what it was? So it connects. That's the emergency system. That's the way it connects. Now, what is it for? In order that we should not remain in full darkness, we have an emergency system which switches itself on when the normal system is off, right? Do you know that a human body is full of such systems? Talk to anyone who studied medicine. That if there is anything wrong right away, there is another. Even fever is one of those systems. Now, if they in New York, survey engineers could figure out something, that's probably a greater result. And the entire universe is full of such systems. If one system spoils, the next system comes in. But the next system is not as perfect as the first. The second system doesn't work. The third system is less perfect. Is that clear what I said? Now it says that one of the sins of the generation of the flood was robbery. One was grabbing from the other. One grabbing from the other is the symbol of building my convenience and the other's inconvenience. Is that clear? So they reduced the entire universe to a stage where for our existence it's already necessary to kill animals. This is how far it affects. And then it was committed. And therefore it is not side effect free. It has all kinds of side effects. It may have side effects which hurt physically, it may have side effects which hurt even mentally. Now, the Jew is expected to be more sensitive to the side effect than somebody else. And therefore, not all animals they can eat, and there's prescription for him what they can eat. And this is one of the reasons of the laws of kashrus. So it's not nonsense.
But the Jew didn't get this code until Moses.
Right.
They didn't get it for many years later.
Right. But the Jew didn't get their entire function. That's when they started functioning as Jew. You have the same as you have in the life of Abraham. There are two portions in Chumash, two weeks we read about the life of Abraham. Last week and the week before. The life of Abraham was his pre-Jewish period of life. His first 99 years, pre-Jewish. And Vayera, the second portion, is already Abraham the Jew. And then when it comes to our history, to the history of the people, is the pre-Torah period and the post-Torah period. To say that things don't make sense, I can say I don't understand it. Are you following this?
Doesn't really answer the question.
Pardon?
Doesn't really answer.
Why? Let's hear the question again.
There are things which through learning seem to be valid of themselves.
Yeah.
There are other things which are only valid in the context of believing in the revelation and so on.
So, and that revelation and sign we have to talk about.
But
give me a chance. Not tonight, but give me a chance. Remind me next time. Come up to a question next time. Pardon?
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
I'm picking this up now, so I'll remember last time.
Oh, wait.
No, wait.